Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
So, how much is that golden doodle or adorable Frenchie in the window? Probably a lot, especially in terms of suffering for its parents, who in many cases are living lives of misery in a puppy mill. On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll be talking with Robert Hensley, senior counsel for the ASPCA, about their push to pass Goldie's Act, a bill now in Congress that would ensure better conditions and oversight for the hundreds of thousands of dogs now suffering at the hands of large-scale dog breeders.
The dog that Goldie's Act is named for was one of the dogs that lived in squalor and tragically was allowed to starved to death over several months while USDA inspectors observed her deteriorating condition, but did nothing to help her.
That's on the next Voices for the Animals, Friday, July 28th at 10 a.m. on 90.7 KBOO FM. If you love animals, and especially dogs, don't miss it.
KBOO Community Radio is conducting a survey, and we want to hear from you. Your valuable feedback about KBOO will help shape the types of public affairs, news, and music programming we bring you and our community in the years ahead. We're also interested in how you listen to KBOO and will use this feedback to help serve you better. The survey is anonymous, however, you will have an opportunity to provide your contact information to enter a drawing. 10 lucky winners will receive a $50 gift card. The survey is open now, and the deadline to participate has been extended to Sunday, July 30th. Go to our website at kboo.fm/survey23. kboo.fm/survey23. Thank you in advance for your time and your feedback. Stay tuned for KBOO's next strategic plan coming soon.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, for the Working Class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host this evening. Tonight I'll be reading excerpts from Secrets of a Successful Organizer, a book by Labor Notes, available at labornotes.org. Secrets of a Successful Organizer, Lesson 2, One-on-One Conversations. Now that you've learned about the bullseye model, maybe you're breathing a sigh of relief that your workplace is not the most apathetic on the planet, but how do you find out which issues your coworkers care about and which obstacles are holding them back? How do you encourage more of them to move from disengaged to supportive and then to active and then to joining your core group of organizers? It's simple. Talk to them. Here's a story. Getting to know you. In Rochester, New York, civil service worker Bess Watts learned the importance of one-on-one conversations after she decided to found a local chapter of Pride at Work, the AFL-CIO group for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender members. To kick things off, the fledging group advertised a public forum for LGBT workers, but the event was a failure. Speakers outnumbered attendees. Watts realized that outreach would have to be more personal and that the group would have to make people feel safe. Few LGBT workers in the area were out on the job. So she began personally approaching LGBT workers in different unions to ask if they would help form a chapter. That worked better. We focused on creating relationships, Watts says, rather than fixating on growing membership numbers. She also quickly realized that you can't expect people to support your cause if you don't support theirs. So to build relationships, Pride at Work members walked picket lines, made signs, worked phone banks, and canvassed for any union who needed help. My wife claims I drank beer with blue-collar union guys for 2 years before asking for their support for same-sex marriage equality. Oh, my wife claims I drank beer, Watts says. It worked. When the legislature began discussing marriage equality in New York State, almost every union in Rochester, including the police and firefighters, actively pushed for the bill. In fact, Rochester unions were instrumental in moving the Republican-controlled Senate to vote yes. A local Republican senator who had voted against equality in the past became the first to break ranks with his party and support it. I could not have been prouder of my union sisters and brothers, Watts says. Now Pride at Work is an integrated part of the Rochester labor community. We pulled the LGBT workplace concerns out of the closet by creating visibility and building relationships. You got to look them in the eye. Email, texting, leaflets, Facebook, websites are great, but as Bess Watts found out, they can't take the place of one-on-one conversations. Talking face-to-face is still the best way to get people involved and convince them to take action. It's easy to read a leaflet and then toss it, but when a real person is asking you, it's harder to say no. Remember from lesson one that you have to diagnose the obstacles to organizing. What looks like apathy might really be fear, hopelessness, confusion, or division. A fire can't figure out what's holding people back, nor can it help them to get over it. For that, you need two-way communication. You have to talk with your coworkers, and more important, listen to them. Where can these conversations happen? In the break room, the cafeteria, the parking lot, even while you're working, if that's feasible on your job. But many organizers have found the more relaxed and honest conversation is possible when you're both off the clock and not someplace where the walls have ears. If you have a chance to grab a coffee or beer with your coworkers or join their carpool, take it. You'll find out things you never knew. Two ears, one mouth. Organizing involves a lot more listening than talking. Try the 80-20 rule. Listen 80% of the time, talk 20%. Or at least get your share down to a third. You have two ears and one mouth, so use them proportionately. This can be hard, especially when you're excited or when you have information that others lack, but listening is crucial if you're going to find out what makes someone tick. Consider your own experience. How does it feel to be talked at by someone who only seems interested in the sound of her own voice? Or when a friend is so wrapped up in his own concerns that you can't get a word in edgewise? When you got a chance to say what was on your mind, weren't you a lot more invested in the conversation and whatever came after it? You have to listen, says Maria Martinez, who was the chief steward in the meatpacking plant you read about in Lesson 1, where members organized against harassment. It's really important to let people know their feelings, let out their feelings, and for them to see that someone cares about what they have to say. Then you can ask them, what do you think we should do about it? You can say, I think we should do this, but I've learned it's much more effective when the ideas come out of them. To get the other person talking, ask open-ended questions. For example, what would you like to see in the next contract? Don't assume you already know the answer. Avoid questions that will probably get you a simple yes or no, such as, would you like a raise in the next contract? When your coworkers tell you what they care about, remember it. Later on, when you're asking them to take some kind of action, your success will depend on showing how that action relates to the issues that matter to them. How to be a good listener. Avoid distractions. Look the other person in the eye and put the phone away. Slow down. Our brains process thoughts 4 times faster than spoken words. It's easy to skip ahead in the conversation, using your assumptions to fill in the gaps and plan your response. Resist this urge. Focus on what is actually being said. Don't interrupt. Take the time to hear the full story. Keep an open mind. Don't assume you already know what someone cares about. People will surprise you. Don't fish. Avoid leading questions like, "Don't you agree that?" Practice empathy. Sometimes people need to let off steam. Don't discourage them. Your immediate task is to hear what they have to say, not to judge. Show that you hear what they're saying. React. Ask follow-up questions and repeat back what you understood. If you don't understand, ask. Find common ground. You don't have to agree with every point, but look for areas of agreement and acknowledge where you differ. Don't feel you need to sell something. An organizer is not a salesperson. You're generally looking to learn the other person's point of view and create something new together. It all starts with respect. When you have self-respect, it means you won't put up with bullying or exploitation. When you respect your coworkers, it means you value their experience and know they have something important to add to the plan for solving problems at work. You can't just declare respect. It's built by forming personal relationships, the kind where you have each other's backs, like Bess Watts did by getting to know those blue-collar union guys in Rochester, drinking beer together and walking their picket lines. That doesn't happen overnight. Why do we have to make it personal? Because organizing is scary for most people, at times even ourselves. No one wants to get in trouble for rocking the boat. The most effective way to address that fear is to link people together. When the relationships are tight, everyone feels safer and it's easier to take risks. Superficial connections won't withstand management's pressure tactics. Kay Eisenhower was a founding mother of a service employees local in Alameda County, California. She recalls, "One of my favorite examples from the hospital was when clerks got together to create a break space out of a deserted nurse's station. We cleaned out the refuge, brought plants and kitchen stuff from home. We carved out our own little space. It was a space where connections were reinforced every day, and more important because the clerks had made it themselves." In-depth conversations. Here's an example. When new leaders took over the Chicago Teachers Union in 2010, they inherited a tradition of phone banking for political candidates, but they turned phone banking into a way to have an in-depth conversation with members. "The heart of our trainings," said organizer Matthew Luskin, "was to keep people from treating these like calls to get someone out to an event. Instead, it was about learning members' concerns along with discussing the strategy to win. We wanted to make sure that the younger members who were in dialogue with the union activists, that we were listening to what issues were important to them, and that they were willing to fight for, what fears they had. New members were often the least involved with the union and the most scared to take action. So in the year before the union's contract expired, phone banks focused on calling members with 3 years or less. Special education teacher Margot Murray says the union's organizing department trained her to describe the school board's goals, listen to the members' thoughts, and project a vision of how the union could win. Members were asked to do something, come to a rally, attend a training, join their school's contract committee, or parent outreach, or fill buses to the state capitol. Callers also advised members to save money in their personal strike funds in case of a strike. At first, the response was, "I'm not going to strike. I have all these student loans. I can't afford to spend any time out of work." Murray said, "I would say, can you afford to spend time in work if they end up destroying our contract?" I talked about the things they wanted to see, they wanted to take away from us. And one of the biggest things was lanes and steps, which give higher pay for more education and seniority. I said, "If they take that away, you'll get no credit in your pay for getting that expensive degree." I went into the history, what happens when unions have to go up against management and we end up being divided instead of united. The conversation usually lasted 20 to 30 minutes, but by that time they were extremely receptive. People move little by little. Remember the bullseye chart from lesson one. You're not trying to move someone from disengaged to organizer in one conversation, but maybe from disengaged to supportive, or from supportive to active, or from active to part of the core group. Slow and steady wins the race. There's one major exception to this rule. When people are in a high-stakes fight, where they're forced into action against a powerful enemy, it can change their thinking overnight. But most times, you will make better progress and be less prone to disappointment if you expect people to dip their toes in gradually. Don't give up on people because of one no. They may warm up over time. There may be things they're willing to do that neither of you has thought of yet. Here's an example of one step at a time. Organizer Paul Crable remembers talking to a medical technologist at Los Angeles County Hospital who complained that the union didn't do much. Crable asked him to sign a petition about a workplace problem. "What's the point?" the guy asked. "It won't do any good." Crable explained that the petition alone wasn't expected to fix the problem, but it was part of a long-term campaign. If the petition didn't get results, the stewards were planning to attach it to a group grievance. Next, they would get as many people as possible to attend the grievance meeting and speak out. The technologist signed the petition. Sure enough, even after 70% of the workers signed, management refused to fix the problem. So the union filed a group grievance. The next time Crable saw him, the medical technologist was more interested. He asked if the grievance meeting had been set yet, and he brought up a complaint that he and some others had on another issue. Just a little bit of participation had begun to change his perspective.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. You're listening to excerpts from Secrets of a Successful Organizer. If you like this show, contribute, sustain KBOO. We're a non-corporate, listener-supported, community-oriented radio. Go to our website at kboo.fm and donate now.
Get specific. Ask your coworkers to take a specific action. Choose a manageable task. Don't make it seem like an open-ended commitment. Be clear about how much time it will take, why you're doing it, how it fits into the overall plan. Here's an unproductive approach. A few of us are carrying the whole burden and doing everything in the union. We really need to get involved. This request has the added disadvantage of being a guilt trip. What's a better way? We're trying to reach 200 people about the dangerous temperatures in the plant lately. Can you be part of the phone bank next Tuesday or Wednesday night? This request defines the task, make calls, the time, Tuesday or Wednesday night, the goal, reach 200 people, and the issue, dangerous temperatures. If this co-worker had ever phone banked before, you could improve the quest further by explaining what to expect. I'd never phone banked. A few of us will sit together for 2 hours and call our coworkers. You'll have a list of phone numbers and a loose script to help you along, including three questions we're asking everybody. Afterwards, we'll tally the answers and discuss what we learned. There's a box at the bottom of the page. Make signs from scratch. If you're planning a picket, hold a sign-making party ahead of time. A party will bring members together. Let them discuss the boss's latest outrage and encourage them to show their creativity. The sign makers will be proud of their signs and will show up to picket. Red Shirt Fridays, another story. As the Chicago teachers built up to their 2012 strike, one tactic they used to get people warmed up for bigger actions and to keep track of their growing support was to ask members to wear red every Friday. The genius of Wear Red is its simplicity. It's something concrete and low risk that a steward can ask anyone to do, even someone who has no extra time. At first, many members would just wear a red scarf or a red patterned blouse on Fridays, but the visibility helped to calm fears. Coworkers who were on the fence could see for themselves the growing level of union support as red spread throughout their school. The weekly action also gave stewards a reason to talk regularly with their coworkers. Any excuse for a conversation is another organizing opportunity. Charlotte Sanders was a steward working to organize her fellow paraprofessionals scattered across many different schools. On Thursday, I would send a text and say, tomorrow's Spirit Day. I made personal phone calls, which was good because I could touch base about how their week went. As excitement and confidence grew, more and more people ordered Red Union t-shirts. The union started selling them at its monthly delegate meetings. People would come in with orders for their whole school. Administrators noticed. Students noticed. Members loved it. Many sent in group photos from their schools, all in red, for the union website. At the height of the campaign, 9 out of 10 schools had members wearing red on Fridays in big numbers. When the strike came, Sanders told her coworkers, "This is going to be your red badge of courage." Red t-shirts became the strike uniform, and community members recognized what they stood for. An organizing conversation. Here are some guidelines for a future fruitful conversation or series of conversations with a coworker. Nobody should follow a script mechanically, of course. Talk with people like human beings, but think of this outline as a tool. The steps can help you move toward a goal so your coworker isn't left feeling like her time's been wasted with a spiel or gripe session. Done right, an organizing conversation leads to action. Your job is mostly to ask questions. You want your coworker to realize she cares about a problem. There's a decision maker who has the power to fix the problem. This decision maker won't fix it until someone pushes them to. If your coworker really wants this problem fixed, she has to join you and other coworkers in taking action. But just telling her all this won't be very effective. Instead, you want to ask the right questions that get her to say it herself. We tend to remember what we said, but not what the other person said. 1, discover the issues. Begin by asking questions and listening to the answer to learn what your coworker cares about. Make your questions open-ended, especially when you're getting to know someone. How's your day going? How did you get this job? What was it like when you first started here? When you're organizing around a particular issue, your questions might get more pointed. Still, even if you have a petition about the awful new schedule, don't leap straight into it. Will you sign this? Instead, ask, how's the new schedule working for you? The point is for your coworker to remind herself how she feels about this problem before you ask her to act. If you've discussed this issue before, you can still ask how it's affecting her today or share someone else's story and get her reaction. Agitate. React to what she tells you and ask follow-up questions. By reacting, the organizer can help the other person feel she has permission to be angry. Wow, how long has that been going on? How does that make you feel? Is that okay with you? How are you coping? How's that affecting your family? 3, lay the blame. Get her talking about who's responsible. Why do you think we're having this problem? Who's in a position to fix it? What would they have to do? Do you think this problem's going to correct itself? Many times we feel our problems are just the way things are. Realizing that bad conditions didn't fall from the sky can be empowering. If someone made the decision that caused this mess, then someone can also unmake it. 4, make a plan to win. Now that your coworker is angry, it's time to offer some hope. Hope comes from your power in numbers and a winnable plan. That's how you make your problem into a problem for the decision maker. Most people want to go back to the old schedule. The supervisor hasn't listened, but what if 25 of us sign this petition and we all march into his office together to deliver it? What do you think he'll do? Will he be able to keep ignoring us? What's his boss going to say? This step will be trickier if today's petition doesn't address a problem that this person feels strongly about. You'll have an easier time organizing if you choose issues that are widely and deeply felt. We'll talk about that in lesson 4. But what you can say is that power in numbers is our only way to get a say on any issue. For instance, if we win on this issue, do you think management will learn something? Will taking action on the next issue be easier? This is the first step. We've all got to start backing each other up. How else are we going to build enough power to fix the understaffing that you're talking about? 5, get a commitment. Ask the member to be part of the solution by taking a specific action. Will you sign this petition and come with us to deliver it on Thursday? If someone is fearful, acknowledge that her fears have real reasons behind them. But still, things won't get better unless she's involved. Your job isn't to convince her that she's wrong about her fears, but that she needs to act anyway. Is the schedule ever going to get fixed if we don't take action? Are you willing to let this problem go on? Helping her through it will be a lot easier when you're inviting her to act on what she's already said, not pushing an action you're trying to sell. 6, inoculate and recommit. Now your coworker is committed, but does she know what she's getting into? Ask how she thinks management will react to the action. What do you think the supervisor will say when we go into his office? If there's a likely risk she has thought of, warn her about it. What if he gets angry and threatens to write everyone up? What if he offers to meet with one or two of us, but not the whole group? Talk through the possible outcomes, then ask whether you can still count on her participation. Does any of that change your mind? This part might sound like you're undermining your organizing. You've done all this work to help your coworker decide to act, and now you're trying to talk her out of it. But like inoculating against a virus, the idea is to help her develop an immunity to the management's attacks by giving her a small dose before she's exposed to the real thing. This way, when management reacts, she won't be thrown by it. In fact, your correct prediction will boost your credibility. 7, set a follow-up plan. As organizer Fred Ross put it, 90% of organizing is follow-up. Agree on the next step and when you'll check back in. Maybe she's going to meet you Thursday to deliver the petition, or she'll ask her two coworkers to sign on, or maybe you'll simply promise to report back on Friday about how the meeting went. Remember, you're not just trying to pull off with this one action. You're also trying to draw people gradually closer to the center and build an ongoing network of communication. You're trying to make standing up in an organized way a normal, natural part of workplace life. Can you ask Jane to sign? Great. I'll come back at the end of the shift to find out how it went, okay? There's a box at the bottom of the page. Ahoy there. The acronym A-H-U-Y is helpful shorthand for what it takes to move someone to act. Anger, hope, urgency, you. A-H-U-Y. Anger, this is an injustice. We have to fix this. Hope, change is possible. We can fix this. Here's our plan. Urgency, now is the time. We can't wait any longer. You can make a difference. Your participation matters. Exercise. Write your own organizing conversation. Choose a real issue from your own workplace and possible action you might organize to address it. Choose a real coworker and imagine you're going to approach him or her about joining you in action. You want to cover all the bases of a good organizing conversation. What questions would you ask at each step? Discover the issues. Agitate. Lay the blame. Make a plan to win. Get a commitment. Inoculate and recommit, set a follow-up plan. Here's another exercise. Practice the organizing conversation out loud. It can feel awkward at first, encouraging your coworkers to get mad and challenging them to face their fears, but like anything, it gets easier with practice. If you're reading this in a workshop or as a group, pair up and practice the conversation. Take turns playing the role of the organizer. If you're reading this on your own, ask an experienced organizer to be your partner or recruit a friend or family member to try it out. Ask about the other person's real job, whatever it is. Pretend you work there too, but you don't know much yet. Maybe you're new. Have him give you a plausible setting for the conversation, such as the lunchroom. Ask him to do this his best to answer your questions honestly, as if this were for real. Start with issues. Ask as many questions as you can think of to find out what he loves and hates about the work, what's changed over time, what he would fix if he had a magic wand. Don't rush. When you think you've zeroed in on the issue he cares about most, move into agitation and laying the blame. See if you can get him to say out loud that he's ready to do something to solve this problem and to name who's responsible. Move into a plan to win. Inspire him with an idea of strength in numbers. Ask him to commit to a specific action. Do some inoculation about the risks and ask him to recommit. Set a follow-up plan when you'll be back and in touch. Afterwards, debrief with your partner. Find out how he felt about the conversation. Did you correctly identify his top priority issue? What else could you have asked about? What parts of the conversation really made him think? What parts did he enjoy? If he agreed to take the action, why did he decide to do it? If he didn't, what could have made him reconsider? These one-on-one conversations will be the building blocks of your organizing, but you probably can't have in-depth talks with every person in your workplace. There are only 24 hours in a day. Plus, you probably found some coworkers you can't get through to. For you, they're like a brick wall. Someone else might have better luck if only you had a team working in sync. So how do you figure out who to start with? Which people do you want to draw into the core group? How can you form a communications network that reaches everybody? Find out in Lesson 3, Map Your Workplace and Its Leaders.
That wraps it up for this evening's Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host. We've been reading excerpts from Secrets of a Successful Organizer. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KABU 90.7 FM.
Baby.